conversation, I speak to Leanne Wilds and Dean Walker about their experiences using structured prompts with Claude and ChatGPT to create generative AI personas for students to build communication and reasoning skills. Leanne is a senior lecturer in physiotherapy at the University of Lincoln, transitioning from clinical practice to higher education in 2023. She has particular interests in person-centered communication, persistent pain, and psychologically informed physiotherapy, and in exploring these concepts with learners in professional education. Dean Walker is a lecturer in physiotherapy at the University of Lincoln with a background in acute respiratory care. He's focused on embedding artificial intelligence and virtual reality to improve accessibility and scalability in pre-registration learning, and is committed to exploring cutting-edge approaches that enhance student engagement.
So thanks very much, Dean and Leanne, for agreeing to share some of your experiences about using AI personas in the classroom. It's something we've been talking about a lot, not only in the school, but just professionally. I think there's a lot of interest in these language models for learning and teaching, especially in simulation. So it'll be really interesting to hear what you guys experienced in the classroom, some of the challenges you had, and how you think that this may have potential for other students moving forward. So I guess to start, maybe Dean, you were the first one to try this out in the school. Maybe just let us know a little bit about, you know, why you thought this might be useful, what your experiences were setting it up, preparing it, and how did the students respond?
Yeah, absolutely. I think obviously the conversation comes into around the real world exposure that the learners are going to get. And I think that's always been one of the key things that we're thinking about when we talk about either language models or some sort of patient-centered communication. This is why we have service users involved, is to try and increase that exposure to, you know, outside of the cohorts, really, so that they've got as realistic expectations as they can going into practice. And then obviously with regards to this particular activity, what I wanted to really try to get was them to have these relatively authentic conversations with people, really. And I wanted them to try and get this mindset for the power in the what we'll call subjective history or history gaining, and the power that comes from knowing how to manage people and discuss with people and use different types of questioning or different types of communication styles in order to get the most effective output. Now, obviously, AI being quite a key, you know, sort of trigger point, really, you know, let's say in the university, I'm quite a techie typey person. So really want to try and move away from this inherent fear that what we should be doing is worrying about AI for assessments and actually move it towards that. Well, AI is actually a really useful teaching resource versus, you know, an opportunity to, commit academic offences. So that was the main real purpose behind me bringing it in and starting to think about that. I guess for context, the cohort that I used it with, because I do think this context is important, they are pre-registration learners, but it is a postgraduate program, and they are our first year. So just being mindful that this was within their first or second week of teaching, really. They'd not got to know each other fantastically well. That was quite clear through the activity. And when I say they know each other, as in within the cohort, they didn't know each other amazingly well. So what they tended to do was absolutely sit in groups that they'd started to maybe start to build some, social bridges with. But realistically, they were attacking this activity quite independently. Sat on their own device. And the good thing with the AI activity was they could use any device. They had phones, laptops and tablets all on the go. And no one really had any issues in accessing it and going forward with it. But they were able to, because one of the things I was worried about was how immersed will they get in the conversation. I'm sure this was the same for you, Leanne, as well, is thinking, are we going to have, certainly for yours where, you know, you had a cohort where they knew each other a bit better, are they going to start a couple of questions and then just turn to each other and then just effectively talk it between each other, which is not what we wanted the activity to be. I did consider things like, do I need to set up dividers across the table so they're immersed? Do I need to set up noise cancelling headphones so that, again, you know, they're immersed in the conversation? I didn't manage to get those resources, and it was very apparent I did not need those resources at all. They very, very quickly got immersed in the conversation. And from some of the transcripts that I have coming out of the activity, asked very appropriate things, set up very appropriate conversations to whatever the patient profile was. And the key thing, I guess, really coming out for me was that it was something that was enjoyed really by the cohort, was something that they liked. I think you found that from informal feedback in, you know, even when you asked them to sort of say goodbye to their you know, AI patient, when we needed to move on to the next task, there was a groan across the cohort, you know, it was something they did really enjoy. So yeah.
Cool. That's really helpful. And Leanne, you had a slightly different context, and you also came into the idea of doing this in a different way. I think Dean and I had spoken about this and kind of that set up the context for him, but you were introduced to the idea slightly differently. So maybe you could just talk about that kind of initial introduction to it and your kind of first attempts at trying to get it sorted out, I guess, in your own experience before you used it in the classroom.
So I was introduced to the notion of doing this on my PG Cert in higher education, where we had a simulated conversations activity around personal tutoring kind of issues. So as the lecturer supporting a student in a personal tutoring capacity, kind of going through a conversation in the sort of same way that we hopefully would do, and an opportunity to try out asking questions in different ways, providing advice or withhold, you know, sort of like allowing the conversation to go like a coaching conversation. So yeah, it was a real kind of insight into using AI for sort of practicing these conversations in a safe way, and then doing that, getting that feedback from the simulation as well was encouraged within that session. So kind of getting a sense of how we sort of responded to the simulation, how we asked the questions, kind of did we display active listening, empathy, those kind of things. Did we provide advice as the simulated student was expecting? So I was just thinking, well, this seems like a really good opportunity to do it I could see the parallels to a clinical context massively. So therefore, kind of, yeah, was thinking about it. It's interesting. We were thinking about it separately, and we did it within the same kind of within the week, but with two different cohorts. So I did it with our second year pre-registration physiotherapists, and I set it up in a different way in that I encouraged kind of a group discussion similar to my experience on the PG Cert, where we were in small groups. And it was a information gathering session, spiraling back to concepts that they'd done in their first year, but building on those with that kind of more rich kind of information gathering from the simulated patient. Prompts were slightly different in that mine were kind of less, I suppose, less rich and more kind of asking the simulation to kind of come up with certain things, and a bit more vague, I suppose. So it was just kind of, you're a patient with neck pain. But we're still getting quite a lot of richness of information, and it was good to see how the group, are they similar to Dean's instance, and even within the groups immerse themselves straight away. Largely there was a bit of variety in the group, but on the whole everybody kind of engaged with it really quickly. There were lots of kind of supportive conversations about how they ask questions, and you know, it was a very kind of collaborative group movement towards kind of the gaining the subjective history from the simulation, which was interesting. On the whole, the feedback was really positive. We utilised that the information gathered to then do a clinical reasoning exercise afterwards, where they had to kind of go into detail around generating hypotheses and differential diagnosis from the information gathered, and they could really see the clinical utility in doing that. So it was an opportunity to introduce them to other frameworks which should support their clinical practice too. So on the whole, it seemed like a really good tool, really, and something that I can see opportunities in different ways and different methods, because we use the same sort of technology in a different way, really. So but with I would say a similar interest in kind of that patient gathering a patient history, but we, you know, able to do different things with that information afterwards.
I really like the idea of asking the AI to give the students feedback on the interaction that they had. Have you had a chance to have a look at what that feedback was like? So did the AI give students feedback that was equivalent to what you might have given them? Better, worse? You know, what are your thoughts on that?
What I really liked is that it outsourced the feedback, so it became less personal because the the AI was giving it feedback, which was not dissimilar to what I would say, but it's not kind of that. It's important that we give people feedback, of course it is, but it is nice to kind of come at different angles, really. So we're sort of singing off the same hymn sheet as as a simulation, as the AI was. So what it was interesting is that when people asked very closed, rigid questions, it said, you know, you've asked relevant questions and things like that, but it didn't give loads of like superlatives. It didn't say you displayed empathy or you displayed active listening skills or anything like that. So it didn't say they didn't do that. It just didn't tell them that they did. Whereas those groups that asked more open questions, they did get that richness of information around empathy and demonstrating active listening skills, open questions, you really built a rapport, that kind of thing. And it told them that they did an excellent assessment, whereas it didn't do that so much when it was very closed. And in terms of my kind of experiences and biases and things like that, I would be in that same camp around kind of those open questions and gathering that richness of information. When they with groups where they stopped the simulation and it was expecting them to ask certain things that are imperative in an assessment, so red flags, for example, it said, I was expecting you to ask more questions. It didn't necessarily always tell them exactly what it was after, which was unfortunate, but it did kind of say, you know, in a way, you've missed something really important here. If it wasn't something that was key information, but it was important for the clinical context, like social history, it did tell them directly, you didn't ask about social history, or you didn't go into my work situation in enough detail, or something like that. So yeah, it had different kind of responses based on whether the information was key or was kind of important in an assessment, but maybe not quite as medically needed, which I thought was interesting as well. So I wonder how many times you run that and if it would tell you a bit more specifically as well. So it's you know, it was different, like in different groups, it was kind of churning out different information really. So because each group was different, which was again really cool in that they approached it differently and it gave them feedback in different ways.
I think some people would look at that lack of standardization as a problem, and it's interesting to note that you kind of see it almost as a feature. It's not a bug; it's a feature. And I sometimes wonder if, you know, I would agree with you. I think that the diversity of responses that the AI gives back to students is a feature that we should embrace, rather than thinking that we should somehow learn how to direct every conversation in the same way. Dean, did you want to come in on that?
Yeah, I think the general activity really complements that as well, because the language model will respond as, you know, the student embraces the activity more, you know. So it's quite similar to Leanne's, that my guys, while they didn't ask for explicit feedback, what we would tend to find is they'd have a much richer conversation if they embraced the AI tool as a character versus as a chatbot, you know. People are familiar with chatbots. They use them often, you know, in various sort of settings. But people are very good at dehumanizing the chatbots. Whereas obviously when they present it with a case study and ask it to take on this character in this role, if they can see it as this character, they get a much richer conversation. So, for example, some of my examples were children. So there were children with cystic fibrosis, for example, and you would find that the learners that did approach the language model as a child, and the the communication, which much more appropriate for children, would get response from the child, whereas the students that approach this with a very you know, a biomedical approach or just generally a high level of, you know, discussion, the chatbot would say, well, sorry, the language model would say, patient looks up to parent. And then you would find that the parent responded via the language model. So, you know, I think it reflected practice really, really well. You know, and I think it definitely does bring that, key point really is that the learners have to embrace the activity. And if they don't embrace the activity and the prompt that's going in, it's always going to be a challenging one.
But I think that's very similar to practice. Like if you go into a placement scenario and you, you know, have a very kind of low quality conversation with a human being, you're going to get very low quality responses and you're not going to have good outcomes. So I think in lots of ways, this tends to map onto what we'd see in practice. Both of you have talked about some of the prompting that you used and how that may have led to kind of different outcomes. Leanne, you kind of gave the example of the kinds of feedback that the model was giving back to students. And I wonder if a more structured prompt with more explicit objectives might have improved the feedback that they give. So, for example, where you said that there were red flags that the students didn't get to and the model said you didn't address these specific or important things, but it didn't tell them exactly what it was. I wonder if we could have maybe try something in the future where we give it a more structured prompt and say, these are the objectives. I want to make sure that the student hits these three outcomes. In your feedback, if the student hasn't hit these three outcomes, please make sure that you highlight this to the student in your feedback. So I think that there might be something that we could look at in the future where we use much more explicit objectives in the prompts that we give students, because the language models can take prompts of, you know, many, many, many thousands of words. And so there's quite a lot of scope to structure what we'd like this to look like in very broad strokes. Dean, I just wanted to get some of your thoughts, because I know that we'd spoken about your initial experimentation around prompting with different language models. Can you maybe just talk a little bit about your experiences with that? And then if there's anything else that you want to mention about prompting, just go into that as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, obviously, the same way that I guess was a thought process for you, Leanne, with regards to the activity, was finding the right language model for the activity. And that's always going to be, you know, a big job to undertake as well. Obviously, this is not an exhaustive list of language models, but the ones that we are kind of familiar with within the school being ChatGPT, Copilot and Claude AI. So I fell on Claude because it was absolutely superior for this activity. It was excellent in creating the character, being the character. It understood that as a prompt very, very quickly, whereas ChatGPT, unless it had explicit instruction, really struggled to get the idea of it is a patient, whereas I'm the therapist. It would reverse the roles quite often and really struggle with that, whereas Claude picked it up very, very quickly. Claude also is capable of receiving documents, which is my next activity really, with some of my learners, where they're actually going to upload a case study that I have historically. So I've not had to create a new resource at all. I've just used this old case study. They're going to input the case study into Claude and they're going to ask Claude to take on the character of the file that I've given them. I've tried it with multiple case studies and Claude is capable of doing that. So it will then, you know, give off some sort of verbiage that it's took on the role of the character. So with that, obviously then ties into prompts, and prompts really are the backbone of the activity. If you don't get the prompting right and therefore don't put everything together, it is going to be something that's a little bit more of a challenge. So put prompts in the same way can be pretty easy to work out and get it to do what you want it to do. You effectively tell the language model what you want it to do. You know, I want you to be this character. You are so and so. You have this. You have that. I'm going to be a physiotherapist, you know, and I want you to do this. So I guess the way that that is for an activity and basing the activity, and I know, Leanne, you had something very similar. I had a sort of support sheet that went onto Blackboard. The learners accessed the support sheet and just copy and pasted the prompts I'd already devised into the AI tool. That reduced a massive burden of the learners trying to figure out what they wanted it to do. It was then a tutor-directed task, and it just eased the flow in really, really comfortably. So again, the prompts are really important, but they're really capable of taking on loads of information, like said Michael as well.
Leanne, you also experimented a little bit with co-pilots initially, yes. Just because that was what the institutional kind of recommendation was. Did you have similar experiences?
So I think with regards to the prompting, the only thing I would be a bit, not that we want to catch learners out, but kind of if we're almost like pre-setting them, you know, so I'm expecting to ask red flags, and then, you know, it's kind of that, it's that sort of catch 22, I suppose, of yeah. Like, we want them to learn in a way that if they kind of came out behind the curtain, somebody would say, in a debrief, they would say, oh, you know, maybe you've not asked these kind of questions and go back in, which if they send the scripts to us, the transcripts, then, yeah. You know, we're able to provide some feedback. So I've got the transcripts following the assessments, and I can read through them and provide feedback. I mean, it's a bit of extra work possibly, but you know, it might be a bit sort of more reflective of practice maybe than pre-setting what they need to ask. But yeah, I suppose that's just a thing. It depends on the task really, what that prompt is. With regards to co-pilot, I think I liked Copilot because it sort of is something, it's integrated within the university, is kind of what we're put forward to use. But then I realized after I played with it pretty much all day and did my own playing around with prompts and my own conversations with it, the students don't get the same access that we do, unfortunately, yet. So they were able to ask 3 questions, whereas I was able to ask 30. So, you know, in that one consultation. So I had to divert and use different language models. I then played around with ChatGPT as one that I'm a bit more familiar with, and asked the students to set that one up. However, in the session, I did give them the option of Claude or ChatGPT. Within that small group, both of them seemed to work effectively. I didn't quite get the glitches that can happen with ChatGPT, where it does switch roles and things like that. It seemed to be pretty on course throughout. But I liked Claude in that it's a little bit more of a narrative. It tells you a bit more of a story about the person, and kind of it says like they straightened their posture and moved around uncomfortably or something like that. So it puts a little bit kind of a more narrative flavour through it. Copilot was interesting in comparison to the two of like ChatGPT and Claude from, I mean, this is because it, you know, maybe my conversation, but when it came to things like red flags, it would sort of say, oh, you know, why are you asking that? It was reacting in a way to kind of gain a little bit more information, which I didn't notice in the other language models, but that's not to say that they don't do that. It's just maybe the conversation I was having. But I did quite like Copilot. I like that it's all kind of integrated within our sort of staff capabilities of using Microsoft. So but each of them worked well for the task, really.
Nice. I'm wondering about recommending this for people if they don't have familiarity and experience and a certain level of comfort with using language models. I know that both of you have used or experimented with various generative AI models in the past. How much would you say that your previous experience made you feel comfortable with taking this on as an experiment to run in the classroom? Or do you think that this is so simple that with, 20 minutes of preparation, we could get people to start experimenting and feel comfortable in the classroom? What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, it is. I think when, as Dean was saying, if you get the prompts right, and it is just a copy paste paragraph of a few different things. And we've both got examples of worksheets, and I know you share information as well, Michael. So we've, you know, there's those that can be easily flexed and changed to it. I think it's helpful to have a bit of your own. I think, you know, it's helpful to do your own work around it as well and get used to the tech and the flavour of it, just in terms of a facilitation activity, really. Have you, you know, play with it, have your own conversations with it, because A, it'll blow your mind, it's really cool, but B, it just kind of, some of those little glitches that we talked about, you can appreciate some of those challenges that maybe come up in the classroom as well. It's also ethically, I don't know, but it's also interesting to have, you know, where you would do a less than perfect assessment. So you'll do your sort of perfect one, how you would want to sort of like work with patients, but then have a play when you kind of do not do good practice as well, and see the kind of differences and how it reacts to, because then when it gives you a bit of feedback, or when it's, when you're conversing with it, it will react in different ways. And then you can, again, facilitate in the classroom again with people that maybe are building these patient gathering skills, history gathering skills as well. So I would say it's easy to use, but I would advise people to experiment themselves. That's what my advice would be, to play with it yourself and see how you get on.
I would 100% agree that you need to have a little go yourself, and immerse yourself in the activity and do it. And exactly like Leanne says, you know, throw in some prompts that you might anticipate that, you know, we do know sometimes learners do think odd things, and sometimes do throw a spanner in the works sometimes and be disruptive for the sake of it. You know, that's not, you know, picking out any particular demographics. It just can happen. So I had this thought that that might happen. So I threw in, you know, an odd one. I think I just told the patient to leave the room, basically, through the language model, bang in the middle of him pouring his heart out about his wife dying, just to see what happened. To which his response was, again, with Claude, like you say, Leanne, it builds this really, really nice narrative, was, you know, patient walks slowly to the door with his head down, looking back to make sure the therapist is not going to change his mind, and things like that. So, you know, it becomes, you know, a really, really interesting activity to have. But, you know, again, absolutely second the point, you need to go and practice it. The other thing I would say along the lines of it, essentially picking this up and using it, again, it's all in the prompt. If you've got a good prompt that you can take forward for the learners, and I guess it depends what the learning outcomes are. Obviously, mine and Leanne's activities were very similar, but slightly different. You know, mine really had no focus towards red flags and certainly really important aspects of an assessment that they needed to undertake. Whereas obviously for yours, Leanne, that was quite important and that needed to come through. So if you do have key features that need to come through, like Leanne says, the problem is if it's clear in the prompt, the learners are aware of that. So if it's something that you're wanting to check awareness of that's blinded, you might struggle with that a little bit. However, you know, I think if you're looking at a task where that's not really important, you just want it to let it run, this really is almost a pick up and play sort of option, because again, if the prompts are right, they just copy and paste it in, they can use any device that, you know, has access to the internet and obviously has you know, a screen realistically, and then what they can start to do is, as what I found, we've massively increased our cohort size. Theoretically, I could have had 40 odd learners doing the exact same activity at the same time, and each person had a very different experience to the next one. So, you know, no one's just doing the same task over and over again. You know, if they did the same patient 20 minutes later, they'd have a different conversation. So, you know, I think that they're the key powers of it. I don't think I had a great deal of AI experience beforehand, other than doing little bits and bobs, as everybody's done, trialing ChatGPT. But, you know, I did really think there was an option for it to just sort of pick up and go as well.
I quite like the idea of having, you know, 50 people having different conversations and the opportunities for a debrief after that. Because when everyone has the same experience, it can very quickly get boring to go through the different groups and say, you know, what did you think and what was your experience? Yeah. But when everyone has such a different experience, it can create a really rich conversation afterwards. I thought it was interesting, Leanne, you talked a little bit earlier about integrating the AI activity with more traditional teaching in the classroom afterwards, where the outcome of the AI activity informed what you were going to be doing later on in the session. And I was just wondering if this is something that you think could potentially have value, where it's completely self-directed. We give it to students. We say, go home, try this out on the weekend, you know, spend a few hours doing this. It's a little bit like being on practice. Or Or is the value in integration with other kinds of activities that we would normally have in the classroom? I guess I'm just trying to understand, how do we integrate this activity into the curriculum? Or is this something that's purely kind of fire and forget? We give it to the students and we, you know, hope that they do it on their own. Or is it a little bit of both? What do you think?
I think it's got value in both. I think I did say to the learners, like, you can change. I mean, it was like some sort of pain. So I was like, you can change it from, it was neck and back pain we were doing, low back pain, but they could put knee pain in there. They could put ankle pain in there. Like they could change that one word within the prompt, and it, you know, will throw out different information that they can then speak with somebody in a simulated conversation in their own time. In regards to building it into a larger, or part of an activity which then has a follow on, or even like a workshop as Dean did in his session. I think there's opportunity to use it in multiple different ways, depending on kind of your session aims and learning outcomes of the module. It's got a lot of variety, really. What I found was interesting was that something I thought was quite a traditional method of learning musculoskeletal practice in doing a clinical reasoning form, even with some of the people that hadn't been on placement, they hadn't seen that and hadn't had exposure to it. So I think it was a nice way of kind of, you know, bringing the two, the more traditional, but with newer kind of tech into it. So kind of that amalgamation of the two was really interesting as well. So yeah. I think it can be used in lots of different ways, really. I think it's enough that it's completely fine. You can decentralize it and the students can play with it, or it can be more sort of like within our guidance facilitation.
The only bit I was going to add there is exactly as, you know, sort of the point that Leanne came to toward end there was we'd reinforced this now as an activity that learners can go off and do on their own. You know, that it can absolutely be a self-directed task. You know, they had seen it done in a relatively, and I'm trying to think of the right word, and the word's not going to come to me fast enough, but they'd seen it done in an ideal way. You know, certainly not a perfect way, but an ideal way. So they knew what the task looked like. So if they were, you know, sort of sat at home thinking, like, I feel like I need to just work on my history taking skills. It's something they can do. You know, they've all got now login to Claude or Copilot or, you know, ChatGPT. They've seen it run. They know the sort of things. They can either reuse the prompts and have a different conversation with a different character or the same character, or they can create their own, you know. So I think that was the key thing to me really coming out from it. And that was one thing I really tried to suggest to them is this is an opportunity now for you to take it on your own as well.
Do you, I guess both of you have had an experience where you've talked a little bit about the language model, you know, as a person interacting with this model as if it was a person. Do you think that there might be some utility to having a picture of the persona that the AI is taking on? You know, next to, I don't know, it could be a, you know, a picture on the screen. I think at some point we are going to have text to video where we're going to upload a textual description of this persona, and the student is going to be presented with a digital avatar of that person, and the interaction will be as if they're talking to a human being. We're not quite there yet, but, you know, give us 6 months or something and we'll be there. But for now, do you think that would it be useful to have a picture next to the person, or is it enough that this is purely text-based? There's a description of, you know, patient shoulders sag, or they look down, or, you know, depressed, or they look anxious. Do you think text is enough, or do you think a picture might help?
Yeah, I mean, for me, on my prompts, I included a AI generated image that I took out of a completely different AI sort of website that will generate patients' faces. So I put one on there. However, that does have no impact at all in how the conversation runs. Obviously, the conversation doesn't include any form of imagery while the students are engaging with it. The only reason I put that in there was just to have the students to have just a mental picture of this person that they're talking to. But from what I've observed in it, none of them had the conversation, went back to look at the picture and then came back again. So again, almost irrelevant, to be perfectly honest with you. on a webinar that I'd seen last night, I actually did come across, because I think I'd said to Leanne actually when we were conversing after we'd both done our sessions, the next thing was exactly as you say, Michael, the next stage is a digital avatar that you either have a text-based conversation with or you have a voice and audio-based conversation. While obviously, you know, it's not for a discussion within the school currently right now, but those technologies exist. They are apparent in America. There are companies that do they obviously have presets for what the scenarios are and therefore what the avatars are and what the, you know, but the AI model, exactly as text-based AI works, it has a multitude of inputs, thousands and thousands and thousands of inputs that it can make a response and a valid output for. So exactly that, you know, and those ones were audio. So you had a digital avatar on the screen, they would approach and they would say, you know, have a conversation with this digital avatar, and it is an AI model. You know, so it's phenomenal how quickly this is really moving and what the next stages are.
So for both of you, was this a novel experiment that was kind of fun, quirky, a gimmick, or does this have real utility? Is this something that you plan on using again? Does this become a formal part of your curriculum? Or is this just a little experiment that was fun to do, but you know there's no real role for this moving forward? What do you think?
I think based on how immersive it was, how students really engaged with it, the learning opportunities, learning within, I mean, mine was groups, learning from within the group, then the opportunities for debrief afterwards. I definitely see this as something that I can think of lots of different ways I want to incorporate it into teaching. Of course, it's important with anything that there is variety and we don't, you know, lean on this too much or in the same way all the time, but certainly kind of how we look to incorporate it, I think it's a really valuable tool. And I think because it is evolving as well, I think what, you know, it'll possibly always seem quite novel, and how we engage with it, if we change that up, that'll feel quite novel as well. So I think it's got real opportunities, and like I say, and it's certainly with regards to different outcomes of different modules. So thinking about one that is running next year for our second years, which is part of our new program, which is largely around patient-centered communication and building those kind of psychologically informed skills and things which are around those what we call soft skills, but are really, really important within healthcare. I'd see this being used in lots of different areas and within that as well, but then in just our general kind of core physiotherapy modules and in different ways. So I think it's really, in summary, I think it's got lots of opportunities and can definitely see it working in lots of different ways.
I absolutely agree with Leanne that there's always going to be a little bit of a risk that this becomes, you know, in the same way that, you know, we do go through these key things and these almost buzz topics that are popping in around, you know, so many years ago it was, you know, breakout rooms and the new thing, and it's like everyone does breakout rooms every single session all the time, to the point everyone's fed up when you've done it for 3 weeks on the trot. It would be the same with this. If you use it in every single session with not real alignment to your learning outcomes and your intentions, it's gonna fall as a little bit of a, you know, lost activity. But again, with appropriate use and with, you know, a real meaningful approach to it. And I think that is like, I'm same as you, Leanne, I struggle with the terminology of soft skills, because speaking to somebody about, you know, these things is the least soft skill you can imagine. So, you know, but certainly thinking around when non-technical skills, you know, certainly things that aren't clinical based skill with regards to, you know, that technical aspect. There's absolutely utility in taking it forward. And I think it becomes, again, it becomes that bit that we can't manage. This is, for the most part, free resource that, you know, it doesn't involve with bringing in, models or actors, to replicate things. There's no inference. They're not trying to, you know, play a character. We're not always, the learners aren't going to come away and think, oh, well, it might be different for a patient. It is that level of immersive. That, you know, they feel like coming away, like they have had a very genuine conversation with the patient, you know, and I think it reduces that logistical challenge as well of constantly bringing the people in to support the session. you know. So yes, I absolutely think there's massive utility in going forward. Is it novel? Yes, it's novel. Is there a risk that it maintains, you know, novelty? If we overuse it, yes, I think so, because, you know, there's that risk. But I think when used appropriately and aligned to what you want the learners to get out of it, that's the key feature, really.
Yeah, it's that opportunity for experiential learning, which, like you say, if we don't role play is if I got people to role play that,
it goes so far, doesn't it?
It would be like 10 minutes. It would take 5-10 minutes for people to just kind of get their head in it. With that, the majority of the room, there was a one group that struggled a little bit, but the majority of the room were straight in, and it wasn't any of this, like, even with kind of when it was throwing back information to them, they were then kind of really, it really sort of like steered them to engage with it as a patient, versus kind of doing a role play with your mate or but it doesn't, we don't need actors and things like that. So it, I think I'm always looking for opportunities for experiential learning outside of the clinic and in a what might be seen as a safer and less stressful space to be able to do that. And I think this is a really good opportunity for that.
Yeah, for me, I mean, I think if this gets us 60% of where we would like to be or where the ideal endpoint is, it's free, it scales. You know, there's very little barrier to entry. You know, we could take this and we could construct 100 prompts in a couple of hours across a team. And those prompts could include things like, you know, breaking bad news to patients, dealing with someone who's just lost a relative. You know, there's so many contexts where students would gain an enormous amount of valuable experience in just practicing these conversations for the first time. And we have absolutely like no way to ensure that they have those conversations on placement. We could have 50 conversations, 50 difficult conversations. And we just say that by the end of the program, you need to have gone through all 50 of these difficult conversations. There is no right or wrong. It's just to give you a flavor of the kind of vocabulary that you might consider using in these situations so that when you have these experiences on placement for the first time, it's not the first time you're using these words. And then I think that there's massive opportunities when it comes to text-to-speech. So at the moment, you can do it with ChatGPT on the mobile app where you can speak to it and it speaks back to you. So at some point very soon, we won't be typing out the conversations. You know, students will just be speaking to the language models and they'll be speaking back. And there'll be a tone of voice, there'll be emotion. All of that kind of context will be included in the interaction. And it'll just, you know, increase the immersive nature of it. So yeah, I'm really excited, and I'm so glad to hear about your experiences. I'd really love to hear more about what happens in the future. Well, thank you so much, both of you. I really appreciate it. It's been fascinating to hear about your experiences, and I'd love to catch up again in the future and learn about what else you're doing. Thanks.
Yeah, brilliant. No worries.
Thank you.